Back on the WMJ Sportsline on this Saturday morning, we're talking with Marty Flaherty. Began officiating back in 1977, so added up 40 years of officiating high school basketball in the state of Illinois. Moline, let's talk about another Western Big Six game. Moline LP, you had a memory involving that. Who was the coach at Moline League at that
time? It was Mr. Frank Dexter.
Oh, Frank Dexter.
Yep.
Right.
And,
Long live the Rock
Green
Riders.
Yep. And that night they played LP, and that was the original time the IHSA started that regional sectional complex thing. It was a regional game, and they played LaSalle Peru. It was like on a Tuesday or Wednesday night. I don't remember exactly. But let me just preface this story by sometimes in the olden days when I had longer hair, I used to hit it pretty hard with hairspray, and it almost looked unnatural. So I'll just start it that way. Anyway, the game's going on, and Moline's pretty much having its way with LaSalle Peru. It's a 20-point game, something like that. Mid to late third quarter, I call a really terrible ticky-tack foul on the Moline guard, and that's his fourth foul, and he's going to the bench. So as he's going to the bench, he's throwing daggers at me with his eyes. He's not a happy kid, and I don't blame him. But, you know, I could have been a pincushion and a voodoo doll, and he would have got me good. But anyway, a couple times down the floor after that, I ended up over right by the Moline bench, right by this kid. So right as I'm getting ready to put the ball in, he looks at me and goes, "Hey, ref, nice toupee." So I go, "What?" So I teed him, and that's his fifth foul, and he's out of the game. And Frank Dexter comes down, "Hey, Marty, wait, what'd he say? What'd he say?" I said, "Frank, he said, 'Nice toupee, ref.'" I pulled on my hair. I said, "This is my real hair. Make sure you let him know that." And so the game goes on, and that's not even the best part of the story. The game ends up, Moline wins by 20 or something like that, but Dave Hancock and I go for a refreshment after the game down the street from Wharton Fieldhouse. We get out of our cars. As we're getting out of our cars, it appears to be a husband and wife getting out of their cars also, and they're coming across the parking lot toward us. And the husband, I remember, it was pretty funny. He was like 4 feet behind this lady, and you could tell she's marching like, you know, like band steps over, like the USC band members over toward me. And he doesn't want anything to do with this, it looks like. And she comes right up to me and she says, "Mr. Flaherty, I'm the mother of the young man you called the technical foul on tonight." And I'm thinking to myself, and I look at Dave Hancock, I go, "Oh my goodness, here we go." And then all of a sudden she blurts out, "Did he really just say 'nice toupee, ref'?" And I go, "Yes, ma'am." She goes, "Okay, I just wanted to make sure he didn't curse at you." And off she went, and that was the end of it. So it was just like, you know, sometimes it's amazing what you run into.
Nice toupee, ref.
I mean, I guess my hair kind of looked like it was in a different spot that night. I don't know. I used a lot of spray some nights. So.
All right, so 4A on that story is Mike Kiss then.
Yeah, Mike Kiss.
New former Geneseo coach,
yeah.
The son-in-law of the great Don
Morris.
The
great, a wonderful coach, great man. My mother just died in 91, I believe it was. And, I worked, my first game back was, Geneseo Dixon at Dixon. And Geneseo was really good that year and Dixon was really bad. So I remember going, worked the game with Bob Ruett. We went out before the game and a couple, like right before Christmas, there was a game I had Geneseo with, and they won the game. But Mike was upset all night and just really badgering me. And I just thought, you know, well, I didn't see him for a while. Luckily, this was going to be kind of a not-so-tough game for him. But we go out on the floor. Like I said, it's a week after my mother passes away. And Mike makes a beeline right toward me as right before, this is before the game starts, and coaches normally don't get in your space while you're on the other side of the floor before a game, you know? It's just like it's our comfort zone. We're thinking about our last good golf shot over there and anything like that. So Mike comes right up to me, says, "Marty, I just want to let you know I'm very sorry for the loss of your mother." And that pretty much proved to me that coaches did have hearts, that they really cared about people. And I'll always remember that.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's great. All right, I want to segue. How about we can segue perfectly into Chuck Grant.
Chuck Grant.
Roseville, Illinois. We can talk about coaching a couple of his fond memories. He was on this show a couple, I'd say about 2 or 3 months ago. And that can kind of segue into the great Bi-County Basketball League, because I know if he's listening, he'll appreciate both of those subjects.
Chuck Grant, first off, Chuck's one of the greatest coaches I've worked for. We have so much fun. I mean, he doesn't take himself too seriously. Yeah, he wants to win, but he's just like, sometimes Chuck and I get off in a lot of different subjects, and it's usually not basketball when I'm working a game. But one night, and this was
it's Chicago White Sox baseball,
and that's part of the story. One night we're at, I think he just got to Monmouth after leaving Roseville. He was a zipper, and that was in the advent we discussed earlier, Jim, about the 3-man days. And Bob Rowett and I brought Dave Hancock that night to Monmouth. Well, we didn't really, schedules really weren't published in the paper that often or anything. We didn't know who they were playing. Well, and Dave Hancock was out of school at Orion probably about 5 years or so. He's from Orion. And anyway, they're playing Orion that night. So, anyway, Chuck's kind of giving me funny looks before the game and giving Dave Hancock and Bob Rowett funny looks. And all of a sudden, ball goes up. First couple times I'm running by Chuck. And he keeps standing there, like, looking at me pensively, like, I'm not sure. And finally, he says what's on his mind. He says, Marty, isn't Dave from Orion? And as I'm kind of walking by, I go, no, he moved. And I'm just, and as I go by him, I'm just laughing so hard. I'm just, because it's just like, I know Chuck knows that he didn't move, but, and Monmouth won the game that night easily anyway, as I recall. But it was just one of those things that, you just like to have fun once in a while, and I just kind of put one over on him. So, and then there was another night working, I believe it was a regional in Monmouth. And I'm working with two guys I'll call the Peoria-type officials. They're always a little edgy. And anyway, it's in the first half. And running by Chuck a couple of times, myself on that side of the bench. Well, Chuck appears to be bending my ear, giving it to me, these guys think, two or three, four, five times back and forth. Finally, the half ends. We go downstairs in the basement there at Monmouth. And in referee speak or top secret referee terminology, they go, isn't it time to take care of business over there with Chuck? Meaning call a technical on Chuck. And I go, well, guys, I would, but all he's talking to me about is Chicago White Sox baseball. So, we just had a little, he was talking about Kenny Williams and who they're going to, what pitching they needed and everything else. And it's just like, it was humorous because, and that's the, like you said, that's the one perk about being around 40 years, I think, Jim, is I have the ability to, I'm great friends with a lot of these coaches now. And it doesn't differentiate the way I call a basketball game. I still call it the way I'm supposed to call it, I guess. I'm sure I still miss some, obviously. But, the conversations I can get into that the fans may think, oh, that ref's really getting it from Coach Hutton, or that ref's really getting it from Coach Grant or Coach Whiteman, Some of those conversations are so far from the truth. We're talking about, I remember talking politics, sport, golf, other things, anything but basketball. So, and like I said, that's one of the perks of being around so long. So
that segues into Bi-County Basketball. Again, I'm going to tell our audience, for those people that don't know what Bi-County Basketball or what Bi-County was, basically most of the schools that in the Bi-County are part of a reorganization or a consolidation or whatever that mm-hmm. really don't no longer exist in their former form. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about the Rosevilles of the world, the Unions, the Southerns, those type of schools that are part of consolidation.
Yeah, the Yorkwoods, I worked the Bi-County a lot, and first off,
the Roseville Invitational,
the RITs we used to call it, just Southern and Union and Northwestern Scioto, and I have. I loved working those things. You have to work both games. But first off, to me, almost the Bi-County was an extension of the football season. They just moved it inside, okay? Because some of the picks and screens they used to set in that conference would pretty much be assault and battery in today's age.
Because it's funny because a lot of the football coaches transitioned.
Right,
basically
Galen.
Were basketball coaches, because Engelbretson at Warren for a long time.
Warren, and Coach Galen Nord from at Union went to football from to basketball, and it's just you could always plan on one bloody nose or a bloody eye one night. You would have to call 40 fouls in the first half just to prevent a fight in the second half, and then call another 40 in the second half just to prevent nobody having a fight out in the parking lot after the game. I mean, it was an interesting basketball conference. I remember one night, I think it was the Bi-County Tournament, and I think it was at Avon. I'm not sure of all the logistics, but I remember Tommy Hassan from Rockridge now was on the scoreboard. And this game is the typical Bi-County game. I mean, guys setting illegal screens. I mean, if you're going to the basket, you're going to need help getting up, a mash unit set up at the other end, you know. But, you know, all of a sudden, Tommy Hassan beats me on the scoreboard, and it's during a dead ball, obviously. And I go over to the table. He says, "Hey, Marty," he says, "I accidentally ran off about 3 or 4 seconds while the ball was dead." And it was like, I don't know, 3-4 minutes left in the third quarter. I said, "Can you run another 12 minutes off or so without anybody looking?"
Yeah, no kidding.
So we don't have to sit through the rest of this. But, I mean, Bi-County was, it was an interesting place. I mean, Southern Union and Northwestern Scioto and La Harpe and Monmouth Yorkwood. I mean, those are fabled stories. And like I said, great people, great. I mean, people were so nice. Lyle Pierce from Monmouth Yorkwood, one of the nicest ADs that ever walked. And, you know, Monmouth Warren people, great people, you know, it'd be like the cookie and cake walk and everything. And then they just get the heck, you know, get during the game, they just beat the heck out of each other. And then, you know, like I said, to me, it was almost an extension of the arena football through the basketball season.
Well, and that's why when you talk about, I mean, transitioning from Bi-County basketball, I mean, getting to and from games, I mean, traveling those rural roads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the blacktop circuit, as we call it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I mean, you have to have stories from just getting to
I know one night I was heading to Roseville, Bob Roth and I, and my car broke down I'd say about 5 miles, and this was 67 when it was two-lane, you know, right by a farmer's house in Roseville, right outside of Roseville, about 5 miles. And it was like we had to be there for – we worked both games back in the day, so we had to be there for the 6 o'clock tip. And this is like, I don't know, 5:15. And we go into this – knock on this door at this farmhouse, you know, and it's dark because it's like January or something like that. And this old guy comes out, and you can smell dinners on the table and everything. And we say, "Sir, we're refereeing tonight in Roseville. Can you take us to Roseville's? Because my car broke down right outside your house." And he says, "Sure, buddy." So we jump in with this nice guy, takes us to Roseville, says, "Now, if you guys need a ride after the game, you let me know. I'll bring you back here and you can call for help." I said, I'll just call my wife, you know, and from Roseville, you know, there was no cell phones then either. So, you know, we get Roseville, we work the game, and then on the way back, my wife had come to get me with her car, picked up Bob Rowett and I, and I don't know, I had probably that other car towed at the time, I guess, or the next day. But I remember on the way back on 67, I'm driving, and like a whole like mountain of deer run out in front of me, like 6 or 7 of them, and 67 was slick, so I hit the brakes and did like a 360 in the middle of 67 while about 8 deer run by my car. You know, I'd never hit them, but it's like just one of those nights that, you know, you think to yourself, oh my golly, is this all worth it for probably a $35 or $40 check back in the day, you know? Yeah. So but
well, and then so what's the janitor roadmap?
Oh, okay. It's a long time ago. And first off, I'll preface this story by just telling a lot of my referee friends really, really know that I'm probably the worst driver in the world. I've got terrible night vision. I don't go the speed limit. I just kind of putz around. I don't know. But one night,
you sound like a great guy to run into on a rural road.
Yeah. So one night, I'm at Milledgeville or someplace.
Milledgeville.
And this is a long time ago.
Flaherty, what?
I mean, I don't know how. And I met somebody up that way because they needed an official. It was a Saturday night, and I met somebody up that way. This is a long time ago. It might have been my fifth year of officiating or something like that. And after the game, it's starting to snow some, And this old janitor guy, he's a nice guy, comes out and says, "Hey, how you getting home?" And I said, "Well, I guess I'm coming back the same way I came. I really forgot about that." But he says, "Well, here, let me draw you a map because I got a couple shortcuts, save you about 40 minutes or so." I said, "Oh, okay, great." You know, so, you know, I'm just a dumb kid. And he draws, he must be working on this map, and he's drawing it out. You know, there's this big tree here, you turn left here, and then when you get to this one guy's two-car garage outside of town here, you're going to turn right there. And he drew me this map, and it was very meticulous and very, you know, well done, I guess. I mean, there's no GPS, obviously, in that day either. So I get on the road, it's starting to snow, and I get so lost. I mean, I think I left there about a quarter to 10. I don't think I got home till 1:30. It was like,
Millageville ain't that far.
No, Millageville is not that far outside of Rock Falls, but I mean, I was just like, it was, oh my goodness. It was just an amazing trip. There was another night I was in, I won't mention the partner's name, but we were in Dixon. We worked Dixon Rock Falls a long time ago, and I think 88 was just built then. It was a nasty game. It was Dixon Rock Falls, and it was, oh my goodness, screaming and yelling all night. We were chased off the floor. It was a mess. I mean, you know, they're 12 miles apart. They hate each other. After the game, we get to our locker room, and there's fans coming, beating on our door. "Come on out of there, you bums. Come on out of there." And all of a sudden it gets quiet after about, I don't know, 5 minutes. But, I mean, it was pounding on our door, and I was a little bit worried. Anyway, then we get a knock about 10 minutes, 15 minutes later. It's the police. There's like four of them. They said, "Are you guys ready to go?" We go, "Yeah, just a minute. Why?" He goes, "Well, we're going to escort you to your car. And we're also going to escort you to Interstate 88. And so we said, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah." I mean, there was four cops, two on each side of us. They had two cars. They said, "You get behind this car. This other car will follow you." So before we got into the cars, though, I said, "Can we stop at this drive-thru on the way?" And they said, "Yeah, sure." So they waited at the drive-thru while we got what we needed to get, and then they escorted us out.
So were there people actually following you, though, too? Or?
I didn't see anybody following us, but, I mean, it was one of those situations you just think to yourself, wow, this is intense. I don't know why they're getting so upset, but that's just – there was some – you know, there was a lot of times you just think to yourself, wow, is this all worth it?
Yeah.
But – and fans – the worst part of interacting with fans is right after the game.
Oh, of course.
Yeah,
and that's not only from a referee
right.
standpoint, that's from a coaching
yeah,
standpoint.
Exactly.
From, you know, the cooling off period.
Yeah, the cooling off period. And, you know, I mean, I remember being chased off the floor at the Macomb tournament once, and Adrian McMahon, who used to assign the officials there, I was trying to pick a fight with the guys, and Adrian pushes me away. He says, "Get out of here! Get out of here!" And he says, "What are you doing that for?" I said, "I just didn't like that guy, Adrian." And it was just, you know, just part of the things you did. Sometimes you're young and stupid, and hopefully I've evolved a little bit from that. So
yeah, and that's, I mean, the part in any profession you're involved in, you're a different official in 1977 mm-hmm. than you are in 2017. And I was telling you the story off the air about John Elder, when he was here a couple weeks ago. I said, could a 24-year-old John Elder in 1967 coach, could he be a John Elder, a 24-year-old John Elder in 2017 and coach?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, "Well, yeah, but I'd probably be in jail."
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah,
because
yeah.
The culture has changed so much in coaching high school sports, in officiating high school sports, the level of decorum. Now, I know probably back in the 70s when you started, the term sportsmanship really wasn't around.
No,
you know, it's like,
I don't remember that at all.
No, I mean, now at least there's
yeah, they're trying. Yeah,
yeah, I mean,
yeah,
they're trying. Hey, you need to do this, and the partnership of the IHSA telling the administrators and the member schools, hey, you know, you as the administrator of this IHSA contest, you have to serve sometimes as judge, jury, and executioner in terms of who can be in the facility to watch these games.
Right.
And you have to you have to protect the official.
I'm not going to blast the ADs or the principals or whatever. I mean, it's almost a catch-22 for them because, you know, the fans that they have to deal with are the people that also sometimes control their job, you know. So, I mean, I don't mind if a fan's getting testy. I'll just say, you know, sorry, out you go. I mean, that's too bad. I mean, I don't care about if
the walk of shame.
Yeah, I don't care if you paid your $5 or not. If you're going to act like a jerk, you're getting out the door. And I would.
And there's those points though.
Yeah,
Marty, is that even there's some of the majority of the people at that school will say, thank goodness,
right?
Even though this person is from our school.
Right.
Thank you, Marty Flaherty, for tossing that person out.
Right. I mean, I think Brian Dennison told a story to us this year at the regional. He says, my favorite Marty Flaherty story is when it was a Lincoln Trail tournament game, and I tossed the guy out within like 15 seconds of the start of the game. And Brian was trying to say, well, there was at least maybe 8-10 people there. I go, Brian, I think you might have overstated that. There was maybe only 4 or 6, and one had a big mouth and he left right away. So, you know, like I said, I don't blame the principals or the ADs for that. It's just something that, you know, we're going to have to take care of it. One thing I do think we need to see more of at basketball games. I don't see it at a lot of small schools, and I understand the financial crunch, but there definitely needs to be law enforcement. I think at least one person with a badge there to, take care of business if need be, because, sometimes you put an AD or a principal in a very
exactly.
compromising position also. I just think it's better to have law enforcement there, you know, to help take care of those types of situations. So
you were telling me off the air, we got a couple minutes left. They're extending the coaching box. That's a National Federation rule going into next year. And then you told me there's basically the rule that I think is interesting. You told me about is basically a warning to the bench. That's a warning that they document in the book, and they announce like a sideline warning in football,
right?
Which I think is kind of an that replaces kind of the stop sign.
Yeah,
with the
I guess so. For the most part, that replaces the stop. And I kind of don't get. First off, let me say about the lengthening of the coaching box. I agree with it totally. I've always told coaches, you know what, you guys can coach on top of the basket as long as you're coaching. I don't care. That's what these kids need. They need to be coached. But, you know, and so I don't care if you lengthen it all the way around the floor. I think that's great for the coaches. Now, as far as this warning thing goes with the coaching and the benches and that, I think that benefits the weaker officials, quite frankly. I think the older, old school officials like myself, we're not going to really, it's a warning, you know. It's like, I'm not going to deal with that too much. I'm just going to probably just give that person a technical.
You don't have to.
I don't have to.
If
there's a warranted, you know, if according to the Federation rule now, if a T is still warranted, you still give it to them. You don't have to say, oh, that's a sideline warning or a bench warning, whatever. You don't have to do that. You still go ahead and go in and with a technical foul you think they deserve it. And maybe there's something a coach doesn't understand, I'd go in for the warning. But for the most part, you know, if a coach isn't going to act right, if he's not going to coach his team like he should, then I'm just going to probably penalize him anyway. So
all right. So as we wrap up, what you're telling me today is it's about relationships.
Right.
I mean, right? So closing words from Marty Flaherty.
I can tell you this. I loved every minute of this. I would go back and do it again. The people, the coaches, the players. There's even fans that come up to me, Jim, and thank me some nights or out in the public sometimes. I'd do this all again if McFly and Doc are out with the DeLorean out in this parking lot when I left and say, you want to jump back in, Flaherty, and do it again?
Break down in Milledgeville.
I don't know if I'd go back to Milledgeville or not, but I would still go back and do this again 40 years later. So
I
appreciate it every minute of it.
I can tell you, I so appreciate my relationship with you. And I made a concerted effort when I started this job is that you need to have a relationship with officials if you're in the media, because I think that's an important part of presenting the game is you need to know the rules as a broadcaster or a media representative. And I'm glad when a couple officials over the years have called me out and said, hey, you don't understand that rule the right way, Taylor, mm-hmm. and I appreciate that mm-hmm. type of stuff. So I it's important to have those relationships. So I'm glad I've got to know you over the
yep.
years.
Yeah, I appreciate the relationship we've had, and I look forward to hanging around a few more years. So.
All right, great to have Marty Flaherty in studio with us on the WRMJ Sports Line on this Saturday morning.